The following program is a production of KHNS. Its content does not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of the Board of Directors and staff of Lynn Cannell Broadcasting Incorporated, the licensee.
Good morning and welcome to Talk Around Town. I'm Deborah Schnabel, your guide through today's talk about things that matter. Stay tuned for our current news analysis with Tom Morfitt, and our talking topic is Veterans Preference Housing and Wellness Center under construction downtown. Our guests are Jim Studley, Lusa Harrell, and Tara Bicknell. We'll check in with community education and, hey, who are you? Introduces us to another community member. Sounds like fun. Stay tuned. And a good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Deborah. How are you today?
I'm doing just very well. Isn't it nice out?
Well, you know, I was going to comment on that.
Oh, go ahead.
Because a friend of mine in Petersburg just said last night, he said, you know, this is our fall is our only season that's polychromatic.
Oh.
You know, we have a winter that's kind of gray or dark green or, well, I guess white is absence of color or something, isn't it? Anyway, and then, you know, spring is kind of gray turning to green, but
And summer's just green.
And this is really, we have a lot of different colors.
Yellow and red and brown.
We get the rainbow. It's the rainbow season. Yeah.
Fall is my favorite season of
you
the
know,
year.
It seems like a lot of people say that.
Yeah, well, I like the crispness of the air.
Wow.
Yeah. And things seem so much more clear. And I think it's because of you're looking through a lot of water droplets in the air, microscopic water droplets that helps you to see more clearly.
Wow.
That's what I think anyway.
That might be right.
Okay. Now that we've got the weather underway.
Yeah. the pleasantries are gone. Let's get to the nitty.
Get down to the nitty gritty. What's been going on?
Well,
what is going on?
Eyes on the Haynesboro.
We
have the third election challenge in about 5 years. You know, we're still trying to get our elections down. Mm-hmm. Obviously, this year's snafu involved a new ballot, a roster style ballot, and it turns out the Haynesboro didn't make the requisite changes to the little machines or the big machines that count all those O's and the O's filled out for the machine to understand that the ballot had changed. And so the machine started spitting out ballots, which upset voters, and voters were then told to do certain things.
Well, I think the ballots have been rejected in the past. It's just that there was no commentary following that.
No, I think what we established was not the same because of the way the ballot changed, not as many ballots.
Correct.
You could mark a ballot. You could not vote for a person in the past and have your ballot be accepted.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what the people who have complained have maintained all along. And the borough was saying, oh, no, this has always happened. And the voters have said, oh, no, I voted this way in the past and it wasn't spit out. It turns out that they were kind of both right. But the hard fact is the borough didn't make the changes in the machines that needed to be made for them to correctly interpret the votes that were cast. And so it would all be well and good if all the votes were dealt with in the same way. But, of course, with the absentee votes, those folks didn't have to deal with going back, didn't get the opportunity to go back and change their ballots. Their ballots were just overridden. In other words, the button was pushed to have the machine just accept the ballot. So you have almost two classes of voters then in terms of what happened at the voting booth. And it's just hard to imagine that these irregularities would not push the threshold of another election.
And I think
and
that,
I have to say that I don't have any great knowledge of election law. I might be completely wrong. But.
Well, I just think that it's important for all of us here, and especially me as an assembly member, to acknowledge that this is how you interpret things that have gone on.
Sure.
And we will have a report from the investigative team, which was primarily conducted by the attorney, Mr. Brooks.
Right.
And it's still ongoing in the sense that today there a call is going to be made to the company that programs that very machine that you're talking about to determine, you know, whether or not what you have just described is possible or what happened or didn't happen or whatever. Mm-hmm. So there's still a report to come out.
Sure.
So we will find that out probably 2 weeks from now. When you come back, you'll tell us what exactly happened.
Yeah. And I would just want to go on the record saying that, for most of the elections I think I covered here, you got a piece of paper and you marked it and there were – let's see, 8 women that counted up those pieces of paper. They weren't the machines.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is way pre-machine.
Eight election workers.
And you could sit there and watch every vote be counted. And I believe that that system had a lot more integrity than these machines.
Oh, Tom, you're getting really old. If you can't trust computers in this day and age, then you can't trust anything because my goodness, they're taking over.
For our better or worse, you decide.
Right. Okay, so that's a process that we're still in the middle of.
The Haynesboro also has kind of found itself in the middle of, to an extent, of this question raised. Are these questions raised about the veterans, the new veterans home?
And yes, which we'll be talking with
about
Mr. Studley today.
The veterans home has made agreements, rent-free agreements, essentially, with about a half dozen nonprofits to move into the ground floor of that building. The landlords who have commercial property are saying, wait a minute, how can we compete against this no-rent situation? The government, in the form of building this building, has taken money out of my pocket. I already support nonprofits through my taxes, and I support my government through my taxes, and now the government is taking money out of my pocket. The borough is somewhat involved in the borough. For the money to come to town, the borough had to endorse the project. Mayor Scott this week said, at the time of our endorsement, I don't know that all these facts were brought out. It might become a situation of who knew what when. Landlords are seeking some kind of mitigation. We'll see.
You certainly know more than I do. I was unaware that there was this. But we do.
The mayor actually used the word mitigation.
I see. Well, we are going to today on Talk Around Town be talking with Jim Studley, who is the chair of the board and the major pusher, along with our representative Bill Thomas, for this project. So a lot of the issues that you have raised, I think, will be brought to the fore and discussed.
I didn't raise the issues, by the way.
Right. Okay.
They were brought to me.
Okay. No, I understand.
That were raised.
Okay.
Also, we passed the $11 a year car tax. Right? Since our last meeting, the Haynesboro.
Isn't that interesting? I guess that is. You could call it a car tax or you could call it a registration fee.
Yeah.
I guess I'm being a little defensive, having been one who voted to impose it. So the idea behind that is that in time, Haynes will be able to deal more proactively with the junk car issue that we have in the community and maybe even provide for program of not demolition, but recycling of vehicles or whatever.
Yeah, I just was on a road looking for a load of gravel that was supposed to be delivered to my house and wasn't. So I was driving the back roads by my house and there are still a lot of those junk cars out there.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
There are still junk cars in town.
Yeah.
There are junk cars on major public property all around town.
And then a long-standing issue we might get to the bottom of Tuesday when the Assembly brings up the question of ATVs on the Chilkat Beach.
Ah, and what is the issue?
Well, that ATV use on that beach has been an issue since the 90s. In fact, it was addressed in a city waterfront plan in the mid-1990s. that recommendation was that there not be commercial motorized use. That language got put in the state management plan for that property. It's unclear from the actual wording whether it meant commercial motorized or all motorized. The residents say, most of the residents live there say, we don't want it motorized. The users, most of the users, or the users who have come out to testify, says we don't want it motorized.
Except the motorized users. Did they come to testify?
I don't believe they have shown up at the meeting.
Okay.
So if people have an opinion on that, I mean, this issue has been kicking around for about 20 years. Who knows? We might get to the bottom of it.
Well, I do know many years ago there were rocks put up along paths that had been actually developed through the use of motorized vehicles. And then the rocks went up to prevent the vehicles from coming back onto the beach. And those rocks have been there for maybe those 20 years that you're talking about.
And I was just talking to an old-timer person who's lived here about 25 years, and he said, I'm for motorized use because when I first came to town, I drove my truck out there every night, and that's where I slept.
Okay. And we could all do that again, I suppose.
if we can have motorized use. No, one of the serious concerns is there is a fish stream out there that the Holgates, who live up there, have put a lot of money into reviving, getting fish back into. So there are some more issues other than would you like to see a vehicle out there or not. And I want to do a quick shout out for the Great Pumpkin.
Okay.
Yeah. Lee Horner. Actually, Kate Saunders grew an enormous pumpkin in our summer of our dreams.
Does it weigh more than me?
Well, you're going to get a chance. Well, actually, the students will have a chance to guess that. And they'll all guess the weight. And I believe it's Monday or Tuesday, the weight will be revealed. Kate drove the pumpkin to the Haynes Sanitation landfill in the back of her car. And then she drove her car back without the pumpkin.
Oh, clever.
So you can see.
Had to lift it out with a loader, I wonder. Well, no, she had to load the pumpkin into the pickup truck. So
yeah.
Somehow.
It's one of those stories that's kind of difficult to report. And then I said it was like the biggest one seen here in years. And I thought, no, probably ever. Mm. But, you know, did Charlie Anway grow a giant pumpkin?
No, but he grew giant strawberries, I believe.
Yeah, maybe pumpkin sized. Some of these things are just not documented.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Tom.
Thanks, Deb. It's always a blast.
Yeah. Great. Be mindful of others. P.M. Fornis, author of Choosing Civility and co-founder of the John Hopkins Civility Project, has granted us permission to present selections from his book, published by St. Martin's Press, New York. Each week, we remind ourselves on Talk Around Town about our personal goals. The first rule of civility, pay attention. Second, acknowledge others. Three, think the best of others. Four, listen. Five, be inclusive. And today we explore rule number six, speak kindly. To speak kindly, you must be aware that you are speaking to a living and vulnerable human being. Keep them in mind. Consider whether you need to speak. Choose your words and build your sentences with care to do justice to yourself. Be mindful of your tone. Think before speaking. With your kind words and tone, you build a shelter of sanity and trust. Others feel welcome. Speak kindly. Haynes values education. We are in a continuous educational cycle. Today, we're checking in with the director of our community education program, John Hagen, to find out what more we can learn. Welcome, John.
Hi, Deborah.
How are you doing?
Well, how are you?
Pretty good. So, John, I just want to start out. How does the community education calendar break out over the year? Like, how can we schedule our lives to participate in continuing education?
Well, it's kind of it's a fluid beast. I tried to keep mindful of other activities that are happening in the community and trying to have things that conflict with other things, because I know a lot of people's time. It's pretty competitive for people's time in this community.
Right. But like, does it have a beginning in the fall and it has breaks with the school, like the regular school calendar? And are there offerings in the summer?
Yes. It mirrors the school calendar.
Okay.
I might be doing a little bit during over Christmas break, just to kind of have a couple of activities for people to do, and some things for the people that aren't skipping town.
Okay. So let's talk about. So right now we're kind of in the middle of a semester, right? Or is there something coming up like right away? Or tell me what the offerings are.
Well, actually, tonight I have a one of the I have some of my very repeating programs that have been popular in the past, and I try to do them again.
And they are
One of them is various carving classes with Jim Heaton. I have Jim. Actually, I have one starting tonight. If you guys are interested, it's our folks are interested. Coming up next month, I have a photography with Ron Horn, which has always been a popular class.
I'll bet, yeah,
and. I'm probably
do you have to go outside and like lie around in the snow waiting for a rabbit to come by or what?
That's up to people. He just has he just covers the technical part of the class.
Not how to get one of those exotic creatures in the early morning lifting off the pond.
I should say it's a basic digital photo class. Okay. So that's that. Pretending to be a snowbank for a photo comes later in your. But in addition to that, like one of my most popular programs is Open Gym, and that's unfortunately being pushed around a little bit because of the most popular building or room in the school are the gyms, so we're competing with practice.
John, why is that your favorite? Did you say that?
I didn't say favorite. No, I didn't say it was my favorite. Oh, okay. All my programs are my favorite.
Okay.
But the Open Gym is it's one of the most popular. It's
okay
because it's okay. And as the weather turns wintry, it becomes more.
And Open Gym, does that really mean Open Gym? Like I could go and if I want to jump rope, I could jump rope. If I wanted to run, I could run.
You can.
But what about team sports?
There are team sports. There's volleyball and basketball. One thing I played around with last year is trying to do some other things. A little bit of soccer a little later in the year is pretty popular, especially when the Helsinki guides come into town. They really like it when I open up a gym for soccer, so I do that.
Really?
And
wow.
I've been trying to find a way to engage families in the Open Gym. So if I have things like Open Gym, have a dodgeball night or a dodgeball day or kick or a mat ball, that's pretty popular.
How do you get the word out, John?
Actually, that's something I did early in the school year. I did a little survey about how people find out about my programming. Mm-hmm. And some of it is through the community website. And then flyers around town are popular. And just word of mouth.
Okay. We often talk about the need for a community bulletin board, maybe on the community website or something like that. Okay. So we've got the Open Gym. We've got... digital cameras, and we have carving. Are there academic or scholastic programs that are being offered now or in the future?
That's actually something I struggle with a little bit because historically in the past, community education has provided a lot of academics. But one thing that kind of has the prevalence of and the way it's easier to take distance education classes through various universities and schools. That's something I can help with. I can proctor exams for people if they're taking classes through UBS or UAS or beyond.
That is a great service too, and I think it needs to be underlined a little bit for people who oftentimes if you sign on to a class or something online and then you find out that you need to have a proctor. I remember I didn't know that the community ed was a proctor until my professor at UAS informed me that I could go to my local community ed program and have my test proctored. So that's a good thing to do.
Yeah. And I also have computers so people can take their tests or if they have to take their tests. And but so it's a lot more. My focus has been continuing education outside of academics. One thing I'm doing is I'm trying to do some e-commerce classes, and that by partnering with the Association of Alaska School Boards. They have a program where they go to town, various communities around Alaska, and teach, do classes that are geared towards improving e-commerce or mm-hmm. improving how people use the internet. Mm-hmm. And so that's something I'm working with them to develop.
Like building the web pages and that sort of thing. Do you collaborate with a local library in presenting any of the programs? Because the library does present a lot of programs also.
That's something I'm working on, getting the partnerships with mm-hmm. various entities in the community. Mm-hmm. And I know the computer classes have been pretty popular in the community as far through various entities. Mm-hmm. And it's not something I feel is being competitive with them. I feel like the more technology is very important to
absolutely.
And if we go through various trying to attack it in various different ways and engage the community in different ways, for some people, maybe one environment isn't the best environment for them.
Mm-hmm. Okay. How can people get to you to make suggestions for things that they would like to see presented by Community Ed?
Email is a great way of getting a hold of me, and my email address is communityed@hbsd.net.
Okay.
And my office hours are 5 to 10 in the evening, and mm-hmm. I'm at 6727-7666.
Okay. Okay, great. So you could also just stop by at the school after 5 p.m.
You can stop
and
by.
And you're on the you have an office in the school kind of on the right-hand side as you walk in the door and turn right?
Yes, yeah.
All right, good. Okay, well, is there anything else that you'd like to add that you'd like us to know how we can help you?
I'm always looking for ideas for classes.
I have one.
But I'm also open – I'm always looking for people that want to teach classes too. If there's something that people are – maybe they're not they don't necessarily need to be an expert in, mm-hmm. but if they just have a passion for that and they want to share that passion.
How about dog obedience? Can you do that?
Dog obedience would be great.
Yeah. So it would be great if we could get a dog obedience school teacher here. Okay. So I'll come in tonight and sign up for that.
Okay.
Thank you very much, John Hagen, the Community Ed Director here at Haines. Always at his desk at the Haynesboro Public School building from 5 p.m. till 10. Thanks, John.
Thank you.
Well, this is Margaret Friednauer now, hosting for Talk Around Town. Deborah Schnabel stepped out for this conversation, I think we called her an interested party. So I'm going to be hosting this segment. And what we're talking about is the Sobolov McRae Veterans Village and Wellness Center in Haines. A little introduction, Haines has and is projected to continue to have a large percentage of veterans among its residents, more than most communities in the region and state. It's estimated about 300 veterans living in Haines in 2009, with 162 aged 65 or older, and about 130 with a disability. That's from research with the Juneau Economic Development Council. And so Haines Assisted Living, or as most of us know it in town, HAL, is working to address the needs of veterans locally. In 2012, the Alaska legislature approved $6.1 million for the construction of the Sobolov McRae Veterans Village, making it Alaska's first state-funded private veterans housing facility. In April, there was a groundbreaking, and construction has continued over the summer, and now there's a new building downtown. The new facility will feature 11 income-adjusted apartment spaces for veterans and what is being called a wellness center, which is the bottom space of the building, about 10,000 square feet of office space for nonprofit organizations that provide assistance to veterans and elders. So with this flurry of construction and activity with the center, we decided to invite in some people associated with it. Let's see, I have Jim Moran and Tara Bicknell, Jim Studley with Hal, and Lucy Harrell. Hi, guys.
Hi.
There, I turned your mics on.
Okay,
okay, sorry. All right. Well, okay, so we have a lot of questions to go through. Obviously, it's become, the more visible I think the project has become, the more the community has kind of become engaged with discussions about it and maybe a few questions, but also efforts. So I think, and please let me know whoever, I might address a few of these to Jim or Tara, but whoever wants to jump in. Can we start with a little update, I guess? I think the original paperwork from the state legislature estimated that it might have been done this year, but I think we see that that's going to take maybe another year or two. So can we just give a little update on the progress of the construction and how that is going? Is that Jim?
Sure. I would just say that obviously the program is doing quite well, the construction progress. They've beat the weather, so the roof is on. That's a giant plus because now they don't have to worry about working out in the snow if we have snow. Today, I wouldn't guess that we would have snow at all. But it's a beautiful day. They are going gangbusters, and we fully expect to occupy the upstairs portion sometime during the summer of 2014. And we believe that shortly after, and shortly in the construction world can be anywhere from 6 months to a year, we would have the ground floor completed and occupancy would be commencing.
Okay. And the state legislature, it was the $6 million mark that came from the state. But it sounds like from what we understand, it's about an $8 million project. So there are still fundraising efforts going on. How, Jim, do you want to talk about how that's going with a $2 million gap? Is there a concern or are those efforts coming about? Are you concerned at all about getting the additional funding to finish the center at all or?
I'm not.
You're not?
I rarely worry about much of anything,
okay.
Except for my own personal life.
Right. Well, I'm just wondering, was the $6 million, that was a mark that you shot for from the legislature, knowing that another $2 million would have to come from other sources?
Well, at the time, we didn't know that, no.
Okay.
I mean, if I'd have known we needed $8 million, I'd ask for $8 million. But that's not what happened.
Oh, okay.
And what happened was that the legislative body appropriated $6.2 million, and we made the best of what we had. But, when you start taking care of veterans and you look at the needs that are required of our veterans and those amenities that we feel that they have earned and deserve, then we wanted to have things like covered parking, paved streets and sidewalks, sunrooms so that they could, actually be somewhere other than locked inside an apartment. And so those amenities came about because we felt it was something that they should deserve to have. And
okay.
So those additional expenses we did not calculate on.
Okay.
And so we then since recognized that, okay, we need some more money. So the board has gone out, and we are in the process of raising that additional funding.
Okay, understood. Should we go back a little bit, and either you or maybe even Jim and Tara can talk about where this need, this desire to do this, did come from? I talked about the numbers, but as far as having veterans in the community that need this type of housing, I'm not going to call it specialized housing, but, select housing. Can we talk about the need a little bit and where the desire came to even do the project, I guess?
Well,
this is Jim. Hi, Jim.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
Going, way back, it was a dream that was kind of voiced by Dr. Sobolov, which started the program going. And one of the things for the actual veterans when they came out of the military service, a lot of them were transplanted back into their communities. Back in the 70s, 80s, and even 90s, the transition assistance programs weren't there. A lot of people came back here to Haines. You had a booming lumber business. You had fishing going real good. You had the pipeline was just tailing off. And so a lot of these veterans now are here. The job market isn't what it was. The housing market isn't what it was. And so to put this kind of housing in where you have affordable, very nice housing suitable to their service to their country is very important. And this project, when it got started, I got involved with it and saw how neat it could be. And then when it evolved into the support services downstairs with the organizations that we do have, it's even more important because for a veteran to get VA medical health care outside, it's a trip to Juneau, it's a trip to Anchorage, down to Seattle. But a lot of these support services can provide, through a referral basis, the same type of treatment that the VA could get them, so they can actually get that care in their community right close to where they live.
Okay. And that's a great segue, because kind of one of the most recent announcements about the project has been the Wellness Center, which I believe is taking up the ground floor, the 10,000 square feet of office space on the main floor. And so it was recently announced that several local nonprofits are going to house offices there. And could we talk a little bit about that, either maybe with Tara? Can you give us a little kind of a – that I remember during the groundbreaking that it was mentioned that perhaps there might be space for services, or there was hoping to be space for some services to live in the center too. And so how did this kind of come about, and now what has it evolved to?
Well, that's always been the plan, to have healthcare groups in there consolidated in one place, and we couldn't officially announce it until just recently, who exactly was going to be in there, because there were still agreements that were getting in place, and, you know, designing the building to meet specifications, their specifications, before agreements were final. So that's where the new news came from, was just being able to say they're in, like,
okay,
they're here.
Okay.
But it was always planned for healthcare groups. And of course, behind the scenes, everyone knew who those people were supposed to be. And it worked out perfectly. They're all part of it.
And so how does this, I'm just trying to envision it. It's called the Wellness Center, obviously. And there are some services in there that aren't necessarily veteran specific that other people in the community use. Is that correct?
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. It's services that are all active right now, that are already serving people through, you know, throughout the region, actually. You've got Southeast Alaska Independent Living, which serves people all through the region. And Community and Veterans Organization has been working with people throughout the region, and will be in that building. That's Jim Moran knows more about that if you want to ask about that. Search Physical Therapy, that's the local office, and Cornerstone Home Health. And let's see, who else do I have there? We've got Lincoln Out Counseling.
Yep.
And Haines Assisted Living Office will be in there. And so you've got, oh, and Hospice of Haines, too. So a lot of groups that are already serving the area and are going to be able to share space, share a common meeting room, hallways, have offices near each other to they had interest in kind of collaborating more and being able to refer patients to each other and having a space that was more consolidated together.
Okay. Let's talk about the Wellness Center a little bit more, because even Tom Morfitt brought it up a few minutes ago. These are services that if I go to Search or Link Canal Counseling, I'm not a veteran, but that's where eventually I'll end up going to this Wellness Center for services if I need them. Okay. And can you talk to me about the relationship that came about with that? I think the thing that Tom was alluding to is that I don't know the arrangement that was made with some of these services, but is there thought given to the fact that they're leaving their spaces elsewhere in the town to come to one centralized location? And are there any effects of that, of other private landowners, I guess?
Well, the groups that are part of it have known for quite some time that they were going to be part of it. And so, you know, the agreements they've made with their current landlords, I imagine, takes that in consideration, too. But I mean, this is a great opportunity for those places, and providing options to our, you know, to our groups that are doing good service here, I think, is a good thing.
And what about, like, for the community at large? I was kind of asking in general, too, because tell me if I'm wrong. This has veterans' preference for the housing units. If they aren't all filled by veterans, then eventually they may be opened up to other folks interested. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Is that how it's going to work?
Okay. Well, the idea is a veterans' preference, but sure, if there aren't applicants for some reason, yeah, we wouldn't close it off to other options. People in town want to stay there. But we're not expecting to get to that point. We're just making
right.
sure that it's an option.
Okay.
But you know, I think it's important to make a building like this relevant to everybody in town. And it is. It's a place that we can all use. I mean, I can't imagine anyone in town, possibly even, you know, a lot of people in the region, too, that could use this building. And it's really nice to see a project moving forward at such speed, finally.
Understood. yeah, go ahead, Jim.
I think the neatest thing about this project, again, is you're consolidating the sports services, and those, in fact, are for the entire community. So it benefits the elders in the community. It benefits the children. So the whole program and the wellness center itself is for the entire community. It's on a nice level area. It's located in town. But the key thing that we're noticing or that we're seeing is that each separate entity before might have to spend extra money to have their own conference room or to have their own washroom or to have other things. In this new concept, those costs are shared. So what normally you would pay gives you, you know, the more funding to provide better services,
okay.
more services. And the other thing is when you have somebody that comes in, if in my case you're a veteran and I think that somebody from another agency can better help you, it's a whole lot easier and nicer to say, let me take you down to so-and-so's office, introduce you to them, instead of just on the telephone say, well, call so-and-so.
Okay.
So it gives you a more personalized approach.
Okay. And that kind of, Jim, you're keeping segueing into my next questions, which is great. I think this is kind of a question for Jim because you're kind of the business guy, I would say. It's being built to what you're calling energy efficient standards, much like Hal is, correct?
Correct.
Okay. And part of some of the wording in the legislative paperwork I notice, it mentions it's going to, and this is a direct quote, but incorporate a management system that ensures self-sufficiency and sustainability with no recurring public subsidies. And so that kind of gets to the point. Jim made a good point about how this is going to help the support services themselves save money and be more effective. What about the building itself? Is it going to become – how do you see it becoming self-sufficient, like this kind of phrase I just talked about? How is it going to operate? Is it going to – I mean, just from the rent or just without those additional public subsidies, it is going to be self-sufficient as far as you can tell?
We're not asking any money from the borough per se. In other words, we've not had our hand out. We certainly appreciate all the support the borough has given us, and they have done that through the assembly by giving us the necessary legislative support and the resolutions for us to be able to apply for grant funding.
Okay.
So the assembly has been very generous to us in that regard. One of the things that we had to convince the assembly originally was that, you know, we weren't going after any of the government funding from the local economy. We do have a tax exemption from sales tax, and we do have a property tax exemption, and that just basically transfers right into the lower amounts of rent that the veterans would have to pay, as well as the residents of both St. Lucie's and the HAL facility for assisted living. So the borough does provide us with a considerable amount of support. They plow the alley. They were always plowing the alley, but, you know, that's a major arterial connection between our facilities. So there's a lot of benefits that we do receive from the borough. So to say the borough isn't helpful, I mean, the borough has been extremely helpful towards us.
Okay. I didn't mean to imply that they weren't. Sorry. Yes, I did have it down here that the project had support from the Haynesboro Assembly, the Chilkoot Indian Association, the American Legion, and the Haynes Senior Village, which is on a wait list. And so I think reading that letter of support, they were talking about how more housing is needed for seniors in the community. Is there going to be, from what you can tell, is there going to be enough demand for the housing that that you're looking to provide for the 11 units?
Well, we believe that there is. I mean, I'm a real estate broker, and the number of people that come through my office that are veterans looking for housing is quite high. And just people looking for rentals. I mean, you have to look at the number of rentals that were on the market as, you know, not more than 3 or 4 years ago, and there hasn't been anything that's replaced them. Both the Thunderbird Motel and the old what was that, Lucy? I can't remember the
Mountain.
Name.
Mountain View.
Oh yeah, the Mountain store. View, the grocery store. Mm-hmm. You know, there's been a lot of these have taken off the market, and so we see a demand for that. I believe there won't be a problem in finding enough veterans that want to come here. I have veterans approaching us all the time asking for when are we going to be able to pick up an application, and and I think what I should share with everybody about that is that that probably will happen in January of 2015. We'll have that application available. But we already have an informal wait list. I know Jim Moran has a group, Tara has a group, I have a group. We all know people that did you want to say something, Lucy? Oh, okay. We all have a group of people that, you know, we know want to move into the Veterans Village. And so I guess at the moment I'm not too concerned about it.
You're not. Okay. And then can you talk to me a little bit more about the energy standards? I mean, I know that that's important at Hal.
It
so,
is.
Okay.
It is. It's very important because that's part of why the costs are as low as they are. And we went to a great expense at Hal to obtain a LEED certification. And we're the only rural LEED certification building in Alaska. And help me out, Tara, LEED.
It's leadership and energy efficiency design. So,
right, okay, thank you.
Yeah, so. Kind of a set of standards that engineers and construction people can take advantage of.
So, thanks, and I never can remember the acronym.
I'm surprised I did, actually.
but at any rate, we became a LEED certified building, and we've got this nice, wonderful plaque that costs us a tremendous amount of money in design and engineering. And what we found out that the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation, they have a very stringent set of design criteria themselves. And so what we have done is we've adopted the HAL Gold Standard. And that HAL Gold Standard is really a combination of the two designs so that we would produce a very efficient building. We don't need to be too concerned about, you know, the number of plastic pieces of furniture we have, because in the LEED certification, you have to account for just every little thing all the way through the building, from your couch to your glass to the parking, making sure that you know, only small, efficient cars are parked in certain areas. So to get that certification costs a lot of money, and we felt that, well, we could take that knowledge, pass that on to our other buildings, and use what we call our HAL Gold Standard and come up with a building every bit as efficient, if not more so, than what we had with HAL.
Okay. And so talking about the business building costs itself and operating costs, what about the operating or the cost of a person living there? Is that also going to be affordable for them? If they're a veteran, I believe that they would have certain vouchers or certain resources available to them for assistance. Is that
That's part of my job, is to work on getting
that. Okay. But then also within, not just with rent, but with utility costs and things like that, living in this building, will that also be affordable for either a low-income veteran or an elder veteran or anything like that? Or is that all part of the package?
That is my job, to continue working on that.
Okay. Understood.
Well, I'll jump in just
sure.
for a second. The rent will include all of the utilities.
Oh, okay. So it will, for a resident, it's just a one number.
Yes.
One number. Okay.
Yes.
Understood. And for the organizations on the ground level, is it just operating costs then for them?
That's correct.
Okay.
We
okay.
share operating expenses between the occupants that are there.
Okay. And so not to push the button here a little bit, but that does seem like a low operating overall cost for the building. Is it really that affordable to operate the entire building just with the rent and the operating costs from the nonprofits that are going to be in the ground floor?
Yes, we believe so. We've proved that with Hal. And if you look at what the cost is for assisted living in just about anywhere else in the state, it's almost 2.5 to 3 times more than what we charge at our highest rate. So we believe that by spending the money towards those expenses on the front end, making sure that we have a cost-effective, energy-efficient operation, then we can pass those savings on to the people that live there and, okay, and make it affordable. $15,000 is what it costs in Anchorage at an assisted living facility. And I believe when the Wildflower Court was in operation, the lowest they ever reached was $7,500 a month. That was not a sustainable number for them, and they had to close. So what we're doing is, I think, a very positive thing for the people of Southeast Alaska as well as Haines. So we've set many benchmarks for the state, and we're, you know, very happy to do that for everybody.
And we've noticed that it's been noticed by other people too, potential funders who have come to us and said, hey, this really makes a lot of sense. And we've also had organizations in Oregon who have heard about it and trying to model something after it. Juno, I had someone stop me on the ferry, and because I had something that said Haines on it, and they just asked, hey, are you from Haines? We heard about this project going on there. And so I told them about it, and they said, you know, we tried to do something like that in Juno and couldn't make it work. So yeah, keep it up. And so it's been a model that is being noticed beyond Haines too.
Okay.
Can I want to just add something really quick? Because Lucy's being very quiet here in the corner.
I noticed. I didn't know whether to respect that silence or
Well, you know, I have to give her the credit here because she envisioned this many, many years ago, and it was actually her generosity and vision that spurred the current board today, which has only had one change in its directorship for the last, what, 6, 8 years that
More,
we've
yeah.
been around? 8 years?
Almost 10.
Yeah. 10 years. So to have this cohesive group of people together that, you know, came out of this woman's mind to make sure that we could do the very best that we could for the people of Haines, I think we have to give her credit for being able to see this vision come to pass. And she's actually been the stalwart member of our board pushing everybody forward.
Understood. Hi, Lucy.
Hi.
Is there anything you want to say about the project?
Well, yes, it grew out of the fact that I have no relatives that I could crash on when I get old and senile and ditzy in the head. And the my one and only daughter, I wouldn't inflict myself upon her. That would be cruelty. It was absolutely intolerable for both of us.
For both of you, okay.
And so I realized that I was going to need some place where somebody would take care of me because senility comes creeping along, and I'm pushing 90, eek. And so if I wanted a place to crash, I was going to have to do something about it. And so that was the motivation behind the development of Hal originally, was the fact that I need a place to crash. And I was blessed to talk to the right guy at the beginning, who has been faithful and remarkably effective in furthering the project, Jim Studley and also Vince Hansen. Those two guys have really made the nitty-gritties happen. And so we are very fortunate to have it. But the idea is to provide services, and people have talked, you were talking about the downstairs of the the wellness center. The services are going to be needed by, more by veterans, I think, than any other group in our population, because they are also requiring physical services and psychological services. And there are a huge number of them. And I am delighted to see this last project come along. And one of the things that has tickled me is that when we first started off, Jim and I went hunting real estate. And the only place that we could find in Haines was four city lots, one block from the main street. And we had to buy them. And it took me a few years to pay for them because they have to be totally and wholly owned by the organization that wants to use them so as to have site control,
okay,
which is required to accept donations or grants. So that was how we got started. And we couldn't do anything until I paid the property off. And then I could give it to somebody.
And then you gave it to Hal.
Well, yes, because we had teamed up with St. Vincent de Paul in Juneau and thought that we would work with them, and they were extremely helpful until it came to the matter of the ownership of the property. And they suddenly said, no, they wouldn't accept the ownership. So we were a couple of years trying to find somebody who would accept the owner, who had a 501c3, because it took the IRS, three or four years to give us our own number.
Okay.
And so we ended up giving the property not to St. Vincent de Paul, as we had thought, but to Hospice of Haines.
Okay.
Wonderful little organization to work with, and one of our key players. And we are very grateful to them, but they have helped make this thing fly. So when we got our basic property, that's Hal.
Mm-hmm.
The second project was the low-income housing, senior housing, affordable housing for low-income seniors. And the property that was available was the old market.
Oh, right. Okay.
And that would provide land for expansion, because the old food center had the nerve to fall down and crash in the middle of the street. And so we got that, and that was adjoining Hal. And then when we got the bee in the bonnet for this wellness center and the Sobolov McRae project, whoopee, guess what? The property that was available was the Thunderbird Motel, part of the same square. So we have gradually filled in nearly all of the square as one piece of property in downtown Haines, and it all hooks together. And I think this place is meant to be.
Okay,
absolutely.
Well, I appreciate that history, that bringing it full circle there. That helps for someone who hasn't lived here that long. Now I have a better picture of that. So thank you, Lucy. And just to wrap things up here, I do want to ask one more question from Tara, just to kind of give because, as I call it, the brick and mortar has gone up. People are seeing it more than just hearing about it. What are you telling community members if they come? Has the project morphed or changed from when it was on paper, I think, is the question that I'm hearing from several community members. Mm. Can you address that at all?
I can't think of any way where it hasn't been following the plan.
Okay.
Did you want an update on the roundup?
Quickly, if you can give it.
There was almost $800 in the first week, so thank you, everybody.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that's going to continue for a few?
Yeah.
Okay, the roundup at the local stores.
Make it
stores.
A good habit.
Okay.
Can I address that last question?
Sure,
just
Jim.
Real quickly.
Yes, absolutely.
How much time do I have?
You have I'll give you 90 seconds.
Thank you.
Okay.
I'd like to say that when Barbara Scheinberg put together the master plan for the Haines Borough, if you go to that master plan, you will dig through that. And I know that I made a presentation to the Haines Borough. Part of our requirements was to develop a continuum of care. And you wonder, gee whiz, what's a continuum of care? Well, the granting entities that gave us these funds asked us to develop this continuum of care as to what people needed as to from the very basics all the way through up to the very end of life. And so we developed that. And it took us several years, and that document was presented to the Haines Borough, and a great encouragement on my part to include it in the master plan that was approved last year by the Assembly. It got stuck way in the back of some page, but if you wade through that document, you'll find that in that master plan there was a reference to the HAL Corporation building the veterans home and putting in the services that were required, and that continuum of care document also references that, and that was back in 2012. So we've done a lot of planning and discussion with the community for many years about what we were doing. We've always been open and upfront about that to the Assembly and to those nonprofits that we were working with, and it's there for anybody who wants to look it up and read it. But HAL has made no secret about what we plan to do and where we're going and the services that we provide for the community of Haines, because we think it's our responsibility to help not just veterans, but everybody in Haines have a better life.
Okay. Thanks, Jim, for that background. That's helpful. And thank you, Jim, for coming. Jim Studley, Lucy Harrell, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay, Tara Bicknell and Jim Moran.
It's been our pleasure.
Thanks. Okay.
Thank you.
And we're back with the everybody's favorite part of the show. Hey, who are you?
I'm Heidi Robichaux. Who are you?
And I'm Deborah Schnabel. I am so glad that you finally made it here, Heidi. Welcome to the show. You're a hard person to find. And I think sometimes so are we with our alternating schedule. But you're a very busy person. You have lots of different interests. So you've got like a couple of minutes to tell us your life's journey.
That is something I've never been asked to do before in a couple of minutes, but I do feel honored. So thanks, Deb.
You're welcome.
And Deborah. And so, yeah, I came to Haines in 2006 when I was had graduated with my MSW, my Master's in Social Work, and I was, for the first time in my adult life, looking for a regular, normal day job. And
How old were you that you were first starting to look for your regular
job?
Well,
I went back to school in my late 30s.
Okay.
My goal was to graduate myself with my master's degree at the same time that my kids graduated from high school, so we could all be off and running at the same time.
All right.
And it worked out. So great. I was living in Gustavus for about 25 years, raising my family over there. And so I finally got my degree.
Did you get it online?
I did a lot of distance education.
Wow,
yeah,
from Gustavus.
Yeah, uh-huh. For many years.
Cool.
Many years of sort of teleconference style education going on in our kitchen and our living room. So my whole family really got to, they could have qualified for their degrees. But in either case, my first job as a professional was at Lincoln Al Counseling in Haines, and that was in 2006. And I worked there for a few years. And I had thought about Haines a number of times before over the years, because when I was in Gustavus, I was doing a lot of community organizing. I was running the Arts Council, and I was running a music festival and doing grant programs for youth.
What took you to Gustavus? Or brought you, or took you, or?
My husband and wanting to be off the road system, but near a political hub like Juneau. Because we were doing a lot of, Well, we were doing some environmental work, and we wanted to be near the legislature so that we could, you know, get involved more easily. And so, yeah, I ended up being in Gustavus for many years doing a lot of community stuff. And along the way, I met a lot of Haines musicians. Mm. And I won't mention names, but just a lot of the musicians that we all know.
Well, you sing
here.
In Heidi Ho.
Yes, right. Yes.
And, I now finally got that Heidi Ho.
And it's not really about me. That happens to be a very common expression in jazz and music history, mm-hmm. and is the title of a number of well-known songs. My name does happen to be Heidi, so ho-ho. Anyway, so I had thought about Haines as a place I might want to end up at some point, but and since I've been here, I have kind of transitioned out of my career as, well, not really out of it, but I've been doing Ivory Scrimshaw work since I was really 18. I kind of chanced into it, another story for another time, and I just, you know, was very comfortable working with Ivory for many years. And when I decided to sort of switch careers and use my so-called head and heart more than my hands, mm-hmm. My hands were sort of wearing out from the scrimshaw mm-hmm. craft end of it. And so I decided to, you know, go back and get an education in another field. And I felt very drawn towards counseling. And so since I've been in the world of professional therapy, I've really expanded that part of myself that's fascinated by the human mind and motivations and human behaviors mm-hmm. and communication styles and all that. And
right, very different than spending your time with a big tusk.
Exactly.
It doesn't talk back.
Yes, a big tusk is very quiet, but it's very beautiful.
I'm sure.
And it has a lot of history, and mm-hmm. I've always worked with ancient ivories. I never have worked with mm-hmm. any fresh ivory. And I still do work with ivory, and I love it. It's sort of the other side. It's my quiet, contemplative side that is a very nice contrast to sitting in an intense session with a person, and focusing completely on that other. Mm-hmm. Whereas when I'm doing scrimshaw, I'm just get to be in my own little world.
Right. Well, thank you. Time's up, believe it or not, Heidi.
Right.
Yeah. It seems like you've crafted a wonderful, very full life. It's wonderful to have you in the community.
Well, thanks. It's really wonderful to be here. And thanks a lot, Deborah.
You
I appreciate
bet.
The opportunity.
And that's it for Talk Around Town this week. Thanks to our guests, Tom Morfitt, Jim Studley, Tara Bicknell, Lucy Harrell, and Jim Moran, John Hagen, and to Heidi Robichaud. Also, thanks today to Margaret Friedenauer for facilitating today's talking topic and for engineering this program. Stay engaged. Think kindly. This is Station KHNS 102.3 FM, Haines, Alaska.